You're listening to the Earlham College Podcast. On today's episode, we're going to be talking about iguana research down in the Bahamas with John Iverson and Andrea Ball. For those of you at home interested in the types of field research you can do here at Earlham, today's episode is about researching West Indian rock iguanas in the Bahamas. John Iverson has been studying these animals for over a decade, and his research and presence here at Earlham have been phenomenal over the years. Today, he and Andrea Ball are going to be talking about their time and research in the Bahamas, what they've discovered, and how to catch an iguana. You can find more information on this opportunity at earlham.edu/Bahamas. Today we have two very special guests. Would you all like to introduce yourselves?
I'm Andrea Ball. I'm a senior biology major here at Earlham.
Mm-hmm. And I'm John Iverson, semi-retired, I guess, from the biology department at Earlham also.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all for joining me here today. So on this episode of the Earlham College Podcast, we're going to be talking about the Bahamas and the work that you all do down there. So what can you tell us about that?
Well, we started this project, I did, with Earlham students back in 1980. So it's been going for quite a while now. Hopefully, as long as I can still make it, we'll keep doing this. For a lot of additional years. Mm-hmm. But we go about with students about every other year, and typically it's been done during May terms, and 6 to 12 students head down to the Bahamas, and where we're studying an endangered species of a rock iguana, a special kind of iguana that occurs, the group occurs only in the West Indies, and our particular mm-hmm. animal only occurs on a couple of small islands right in the middle of the Bahamas.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool. So how long have you been interested in studying these iguanas? How did you originally hear about them?
Well, I was lucky in graduate school in 1973 at the University of Florida. Mm-hmm. I was working on turtles, my other love, and my major professor had gotten a grant to work on these iguanas in the West Indies. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, he had just returned from the Philippines, where he had rediscovered a monitor lizard related to the Komodo dragon. That it hadn't been, there were only three known specimens from the 1800s, and no one knew really where it came from. Mm. And he had just rediscovered its location. So that put him in a bad situation, because he really had to go and follow up on this discovery, mm-hmm. and he got a grant to do that. But he also had this grant to work on West Indian iguanas. So what is he going to do? So I happened to be in the right place at the right time, and I was a field person, and he knew it. And so he said, how would you like to take the field portion of this over? Oh. And long story short, it ended up being my dissertation.
How cool is that?
So really lucky.
Yeah. How about you, Andrea? How did you hear about this?
I first heard about this my freshman year, and mm-hmm. John came into EcoBio to talk about the research project, and I thought that it would be amazing. I've had other research experiences here at Earlham doing field research with birds and small mammal trapping, and mm-hmm. I thought it would be a great experience to get a little knowledge in herpetology.
Mm-hmm. That's so super cool. So if you go on the Earlham College website and look for the Bahamas May Term, you can find this fun video called How to Catch an Iguana 101. So what could you tell us about catching the iguanas?
Well, just a little background. That video was put together by a former Earlham student who went, two decades ago, I guess, to the Bahamas mm-hmm. with me. And I still interact with him regularly. He was just back for his 20-year reunion. Mm-hmm. in October, and he went on one of the recent trips with me and took along his GoPro camera and was taking pictures of anything and everything. Mm-hmm. And on the way back, I said, hey, you know, did you get some footage of techniques? Because it's always helpful to be able to show students before we go how to catch iguanas, what we're going to do, and that sort of thing, rather mm-hmm. than try to do it while we're all standing around in the field. Mm-hmm. And so he said, well, sure, I'll just throw something together. So that was a quick and dirty overview of for the class, for the prep, for the May term.
Yeah.
It's a little more realistic because we, in the first couple of days before we go to the Bahamas, mm-hmm. we pass around the museum iguana.
Oh.
And she's really docile and just like hangs out on you and falls asleep, but that's not at all how the wild iguanas behave.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, he's like thrashing around in the net, and that must be so scary.
They don't like being caught, that's for sure.
But I'm always impressed because we go down there and the students, we walk on the beach and there are iguanas running around, and we sort of catch an iguana to sort of do show and tell and kind of talk about these techniques. But, you know, they're amazing. Students are usually quite timid at first. Oh, my gosh, they'll all get scratched. I'll get hit with the tail. And within about 15 minutes, they're professional iguana catchers.
Oh, my gosh.
It's always impressive.
Okay, so you've caught your iguana, and then how do you keep track of them? What do you do then?
So we individually mark each iguana. Mm-hmm. We do that by clipping the toenails, basically, and in a unique number combination. Mm-hmm. And so we can use those numbers separately for males and females. And if we have a really old male, we can use his number again on a really small juvenile. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing we do is use these, they're called PIT tags, passive integrated transponders.
Okay.
They're the same little microchip, they call them microchips, that you put in your cats and dogs.
Oh,
they're
okay.
Not really a microchip, and they function really well. We have a scanner, and we just scan across the body of the iguana, and it's number 568753A.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty efficient. And with those two methods, it means that even if the PIT tag was destroyed by accident, or if an iguanas, they occasionally tear off their toes naturally on the rocks, so with that redundant system, we know everybody. And so we've been following some of these iguanas for 30 years,
iguanas. Living in the Bahamas, I've heard you all live on a boat for 10 days. Andrea, do you want to tell us about that?
Sure, yeah. So we arrive down in the Bahamas. We all flew down on the same flight and then drove immediately to the marina.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there we get on a boat, and our boat ride out is about, 6 hours? And everybody's very jet-lagged because we got up really early that morning to catch the flight. But we... So it's about a 6-hour ride, and some people get a little seasick at that point. I was just asleep. but then when we get there, we talk a little bit more about how the process is going to go. And the next day, we head out straight to an island, and we take a little dinghy out, and we catch iguanas from about 9 to 5, I'd say, with a little break for lunch, maybe like a peanut butter sandwich or something like that. But 10 days on the ocean is a long time. I wasn't sure how it was really going to go, but it turned out to be really fun. I learned a lot about, showering off the back of a boat with, dish soap.
Mm-hmm.
and, it was a great time. And if you get, it's really hot down there. So if you get too hot, you can just jump in the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
But, most of the time you're walking around actively trying to find iguanas and catching them in a couple different ways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
so cool. The quarters are kind of close on the boat.
Right.
This boat is a newer boat than what I used to do, where we were really packed like sardines. But this one, the bunks are only about 2 feet tall.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wake up in the middle of the night and you sit up, you're going to hit your head.
Oh.
We all come back with bumps on our heads. But it's so living close together and, you know, and everybody eating together and all that is good and bad. It's a lot of fun to be, share stories and that sort of thing. And then there's room on the boat if somebody wants to, like, go and have a private conversation, they can do that.
But they fed us like kings and queens. The food was excellent.
Oh.
The staff on the boat takes real pride in their meals, and so we got to eat some like of the local food, like fish and things like that. And we had some conch, which was pretty cool, like the big shells. We ate so much on that trip. No one ever went hungry, that's for sure.
It is so nice to come back after we've been on the island since 9 o'clock in the morning, and you know, it's getting, the sun's starting to go down, and we're tired, we're hot, and we jump in the water and, you know, wash off, and then come up, and then dinner's ready. And we didn't even have to do anything.
That's so nice.
So great, because you're tired, let me say, after a long day. And we had a couple times, too, where we were stranded for a couple hours because of storms and rain on islands, where it's hard to get the smaller boat up to the side because it's so rocky.
I didn't even think about that. Oh my goodness!
So when you're drenched and you're cold and wet and tired, and you get back on the boat and they have hot chocolate for you, it's pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. How do you think this has shaped your Earlham experience?
Oh, it's certainly been one of my favorites. It probably ranks up there with my study abroad. I studied abroad in Tanzania, and we got to do a little bit of research there too.
Mm-hmm.
And just field research is definitely one of my passions. And this really reiterated that and brought it home for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super cool. So you said you've been seeing some of these iguanas for over 30 years. What kind of things have you observed over these years?
Well, when we started working with this kind of iguana, this particular species of iguana, literally nothing was known. I mean, people knew that it existed, but no one knew how big they got, how many mm-hmm. eggs they laid, when they laid their eggs, where they... Literally nothing was known. So all the stuff that we've been able to accumulate with these student-faculty projects over these last three-plus decades mm-hmm. has been new information, which was exciting to be the first person. I remember many, what year was that? I'm not sure what year that was, but a long time ago when we found the first nest, and that's, pretty exciting. But we've also been just doing kind of basic natural history work, that how long does it take an animal to get to reach maturity? And just as it turns out, it takes 12 years for one of these females of this iguana to reach maturity. That's the longest time to maturity of any lizard in the world.
Oh, wow.
And most of the big lizards that would normally take a long time have been studied. And so it makes it pretty phenomenal to have this for our iguana.
Yeah.
And again, we almost everything we find is new. When we started, the population was really small. It's a critically endangered species, and it was believed when it was first described in 1915, it was thought, when it was initially described, to be extinct at that point.
Oh, wow.
Two specimens had been seen in the 1890 on a research expedition down there, and according to the literature, they shot both of them.
Oh, my gosh.
One of them died, and they brought it back, and it became the type specimen that on which the species was described. The second one ran down a burrow. But their conclusion at that time, again, when the paper was published in 1915, is it was gone. We were never going to see this again.
Oh, my gosh.
Then, interestingly, in about the 1950s, yachts people with private yachts, started going down to the Bahamas and after the war, basically, in World War II, and there were reports, indirect reports, coming back that people were seeing iguanas on these very same islands, and not a lot of them, but some of them. And then a biologist finally went down in 1970, kind of did a survey of these two islands. These are two little islands. One of them's about 8 acres, and the other one is probably about 10 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And anyway, he walked on these islands, and he estimated that there might be 75-ish on each of the two islands. So it wasn't extinct. Which was the good news. And so that was 1970. And then we started, our first year was 1980. And then when we got there, there were maybe as many as 300 on these two islands. So the population was recovering.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've watched it, and we've assisted with that recovery. We've been involved with two translocations where we moved some iguanas from those two islands to two other protected islands.
Mm-hmm.
So now there are these backup populations.
Oh.
So just in case a hurricane or a dog or a disease or something happens, we've got some backup.
Mm-hmm.
So. One of the most exciting things really about being able to participate in something like this is there are two ways that you can study the life history of animals. There's kind of a snapshot deal where you just go and you look at what's there right now.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's looking at them over time and seeing how they change. So how long the study has been going on, it's really amazing to be able to participate in something this long standing.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to the advantages of being able to do this at Earlham. Because if you were at a major university and you wanted to do such a study for a long period of time, it's not likely that you'd be able to get funding to do that, because you've always got to come up with something new and cutting edge and that sort of thing. And that means that projects typically in academia last for a year or two or three, maybe at the most. But because we're here at Earlham and we've got some endowed funds that help support the students, and students can be involved, we can put all our resources together, and we can keep doing this together as a collaborative project. And we have, in effect, our own money, that is our own funding. The students kick in their tuition dollars, and I kick in my time and some of my own money.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just keep going down time and time again. We don't have to rely on writing a new grant proposal with some new angle every year. And that's, again, that's what makes this so interesting as a long-term project.
Yeah.
These kinds of studies are rare, and I'm really lucky to have been a part of it.
Mm-hmm. Thank you all so much for joining me today. This has been really cool to hear about something as cool as this from two people as passionate as you are.
Thanks very much for having us.
Yeah.
This is great fun.
All right. Thank you very much.